Welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode number 211. I am your host, James Gilmore. And joining me for this particularly memorable edition of the podcast, we have Peter, can't get you out of my head, Willington.
Hello.
And Keith, once you've seen it, you can't unsee it, Andrew.
I prefer his one, actually.
That's because it's got a tenuous link to Kylie Minogue.
Tenuous?
Well, okay, an explicit one. Explicit links are the best kind, incidentally.
James, that introduction felt like I was on a roller coaster.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, it's nice to weird people out every now and then, I always
think. Yeah, let's do it. Let's weird people out. Let's make this the weird show.
All right, then. We'll do it all backwards. And all right. I'll play the whole thing in reverse, and it will sound like a demonic chant. And that's what people do, isn't it? They listen to records backwards because they're convinced there's, like, some signals from Satan in there or something.
What, in music?
Yeah. Well, there's all that stuff, but, you know, you play Dark Side of the Moon backwards and, you know, you hear it, it tells you to stab your grandmother with a fork or something like that. Weird
Judas
messages.
It was all about Judas Priest and stuff.
That's right, Judas Priest.
Yeah, but, okay. But if you're the sort of person that's playing records backwards, I think you've got a few more problems than supposed demonic, like, possession, haven't you?
I suppose it's an unfair sort of... More problems than demonic possession.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the least of your worries, really.
Like, I'd say problem number one, too much time on your hands. Like,
problem number two, broken record player.
Yeah, exactly.
Where were you guys last week, by the way?
Keith, do you want to answer this one first?
We weren't together, were we? I don't know.
Are we not telling him about it? No, I...
knew it.
I was moonlighting...
Ooh.
On another podcast, which will go unnamed, but it's about voice acting. I was on that one, and also I was cleaning up my flat. I just had to get it done. I've been doing too much, having too much of a good time, and I realised. I looked up from my keyboard, I looked around me, and I saw that my room was an absolute. Well, my front room was an absolute state. So I just thought to myself.
A very physical gamer, then. You throw stuff about the room.
Yeah, create absolutely. Mess. Yeah, and I sweat a lot. And I thought to myself, do you know what? Do you know what would be better than me appearing on the show and me not having a nice, tidy apartment with which to have some sort of semblance of normal life? I thought, get a lovely new person in on the podcast. That's what I thought to myself.
Which so,
you did quite well, didn't you? I listened to a bit of it.
We had Laura Rich, who was one of our interns, in for... last week, and it was really good fun, actually. It was really nice, and we got some lovely comments as well. Rating Laura, she did very, very well. And she does this anyway. She does podcasts for other sites, so she knows the score.
We should get her on again at some point.
Yeah, it's a time...
He's not dedicated. How many have you been on? Not many. Whatever.
The podcast, I have to have a heart transplant.
Oh. Yeah, you can't survive without a heart goal.
Apparently.
And liver and whatever else.
It was really good fun. I know you were a bit ill, weren't you, Keith?
I was more than a bit ill.
Very ill.
No, I wasn't dying. There was a rumour going around that I was dying, but I wasn't dying.
A rumour perpetrated by you, perchance?
No, I read that.
Perpetrated by developers who don't like me, I think.
What? I read that in Heat magazine.
Yeah, well, I did give an interview and obviously took them around my house, but apart from that...
You can't let them. They'll always misquote you, man.
Well, I know. I need lessons. I wasn't used to this kind of fame.
You need your training.
I'm back to more heart and soul form this week.
Good. Exciting stuff. Well, we have got some interesting news about new iPad models, some fun information about old emulators, and a little bit of info about Broken Sword that you may not be quite so pleased to hear, but we should probably go without further ado to the news. Right, before we get into any serious news stuff, we're just going to rattle off a few updates for large games that have just received some extra stuff. First off the bat being Angry Birds Star Wars. They've been gradually updating this with new bits and pieces relating to all the movies. So the last one, I think, was the Hoth level. So you got all the snow and all the AT-AT walkers and all that malarkey. Now the Millennium Falcon is... taken off from Hoth, and it's doing that bit where they evade the Imperial fleet and hide in an asteroid, which in a cave, which might be a cave, or it might not be a cave, who knows? And there are Minox in it. And these Minox are now Pig Minox, which they've just called Pig Minox. I thought they might come up with a cute name or something. Mm-hmm. A pig knock, but no, just Minox. So there's 20 brand new Angry Birds Star Wars levels. Fly around inside this cave thing, which is probably not a cave thing if you've seen the movie, but you know, I won't spoil it for you.
Spoil Star Wars.
People still get cross about that. People still you have to flag up spoilers for films that are 30 years old. They get really arsey. It's a word.
It's like Father Christmas, isn't it? It's one of them things you can't talk about.
Exactly, you can't ruin it. So turn the app on and download it. It'll be there. A bunch of new levels, new bonus levels, a couple of new powers all as well, probably. That's usually the way it goes. So yeah, do that. The Minecraft update we talked about last week has landed. So that means that you've now got new blocks, sandstone things, gravity for some other stones. You've got stairs that go upside down or whatever, which is a good thing, I suppose. I never got understood that, because if you turn a staircase upside down, it just looks like a staircase going the right way up.
You know, as the film with as David Bowie's Labyrinth proved, really.
See, that's exactly the same reference that Laura made last week. Everyone busts out the Bowie Labyrinth reference. I pointed out Escher. Everyone else goes for the end of Labyrinth. Yeah.
It's much you're just more sophisticated. Although back in the days when Will hosted this podcast, I'm never sure whether they made it to recording, but he would often sing some of the songs from Labyrinth.
How you burn my world, you precious thing.
Yeah, it's pretty similar to that, and he would lose me in a similar vein. So yeah.
I move the stars for no one.
God, this is actually like a flashback.
Sorry, couldn't resist. Yeah, so there is extra bit things you can find in Minecraft if you really want to, if you are of a Minecraft bent. Go and download that now. And what's the other one? Oh, yeah, The Simpsons Tapped Out. If you're playing this, then A, you're not alone, and B, slightly shame on you, because...
They're not alone.
Yeah, not alone at all. It made how many million in the past few months?
What did we talk about?
Some disgusting number, like 32 or something like that.
I only wrote this a few hours ago. I can't remember.
Yeah, no, I read it as well.
Is it 23 million in the last 3 months?
A horrible number of millions. So there are plenty
of profit, but it's, you know, revenue.
Yeah, lots and lots and lots of players. They have released, slightly prematurely in my opinion, a Valentine's Day update. 2 weeks in advance, so you can now use this temporary currency, which is hearts, and there are little extra plot lines, like you're supposed to go and complete quests with Bart, so he falls in love with a girl called Shauna, and you've got to get Homer and Marge together, and they can canoodle in the miniature golf, which is what they do in the series, as I remember. And a couple of new buildings as well, restaurants to take things, just general romantic slushy crap. That's going to be around, but only until February the 28th. So it's a limited time thing. So if you want to go and experience love Simpsons style on your mobile phone, then you got a few weeks to do it. Just go and have a look at that. Download away. But more importantly, I have a question to ask you both. It's a question that has haunted man since, I was going to say the beginning of time, but probably more like 2009. How many gigs must an iPad have before it knows it's an iPad?
Is that a question?
Yeah. It had a question mark at the end. It's a question.
Well,
it was an upward inflection.
The scratchy, dented iPad one I have actually sitting right beside me now is blessed at only 16 gig.
I would say 8, 16, 32...
You don't have an iPad, do you, Peter?
I do not have an iPad, no.
Is this a voluntary thing? Like, did you want one and don't have the...
Were you not pocket rooms or Father Christmas bring you one?
No, well, you see, the thing is, I think if Father Christmas gave me an iPad, I think I would say thanks, Nick, but...
Nick?
St. Nick.
Oh.
But, I already have an iPhone. The amount of games that are on iPhone, just on iPhone or just on iPad, is dwindling to, you know, such a minimal number, and I'm not that fussed about the games that are on iOS having a larger screen. I don't really need that real estate space. I would actually say Listen,
I think Saint Nick is already like two houses down now.
I don't care. I'm shouting at him as he's moving away. I'd say Kris Kringle. Listen,
Nick Christmas. I thought that's his name now, isn't it?
Probably. I'd tell you what. Go off, do your thing. Swing back here with an Android tablet. Then we'll talk.
Boo.
Because
boo
here. Controversial.
Or something like a Windows tablet or something like that, or a BlackBerry one even. I want access to different formats. I don't want access to the same format with a larger screen.
Right, okay.
Smaller screen.
Larger screen. iPad larger screen.
Well, you can get the mini one.
I don't want a mini because that looks horrible. Have you seen?
Tempted by the mini.
The resolution on it is nasty.
I like the look of the unit. I agree, though, that when they release a Retina version of it, then I'm interested.
Yeah, that
I'll be interested if only because the first ones will be cheaper, and then I'll buy one of those. I honestly, I was saying this to John, who's not here, when we were out for a drink the other night. I cannot tell the difference between an iPad 2 or a 3 and 4, unless they're next to each other. The screens look identical to me, and I have got quite good eyesight, and unless they're next to each other, I really cannot see the difference.
You
can see it on the font, the words.
You can see it on the icons, man.
You've really got to be looking for it. It's not the leap that it was on iPhone and the iPod Touch.
Disagree.
Anyway, away from the point here. The question was, how many gigs should an iPad have?
200, 300, 400 and something.
Okay. You might be slightly disappointed then.
I always ask for too much.
Yeah, it is. You're always going to be disappointed. That's how you set yourself up for a fall, Keith.
Yeah.
Too many Christmases. I've learned that. Where's my Porsche? My one only has 16. Yours only has 16. It goes up to 64 currently at the moment, which you'd think would be quite enough. But in this day and age where space is cheap and life is cheap. No, space is cheap and flash memory is everywhere and you think you could just have gigs and terabytes. You'd think it should go a bit higher. Apparently Apple agrees and has decided to introduce a 128 gigabyte iPad.
Mm.
Wowzers. Which is due to arrive February 8th, I think. It's coming out. Let me check that. No, February the 5th. I'm a liar. It's going to be available in black or white with Wi-Fi or Wi-Fi and cellular. And we'll be packing 128 of those gigabytes right inside the iPad. It's the same size, from what I understand. No difference, no visible difference, just more storage. Now,
so we don't have to call this iPad 5 or...
Oh, God, I hope not. No, I just...
4.5 or...
All these iterations. Thing is, it's not going to come cheap. You're going to be looking at paying £639 for the Wi-Fi-only model.
What?
If you want Wi-Fi and cellular, that'll be £739, if you please.
Plus a business plan.
Which works out to what? It's like, I suppose, 700, 900 bucks or something?
Way more than that.
Yeah, but that's the conversion, but they get it cheaper than us, remember?
Oh, yeah, of course. They get roughly the same. Yeah, I mean, but if you... So, obviously, that's the American price, but if you were to give the Americans, like, an idea of how much that costs us...
Oh, right. Oh, in that case, yeah, it's $1,000 or something.
Well over $1,000 for... an iPad. I like the iPad. I think it's cool. And if I had an Android phone, I'd love an iPad, but I wouldn't pay over $1,000 for one. $1,000. Like, what are you gonna put on everything in the store.
I've only come close to filling this 16 gig once and then I've just got rid of a few things that I don't use anymore. How the hell would you fill 128?
Well, you've got to be a power user, inverted commas, haven't you? You've got to be like one of these people who has thousands upon thousands of games, who puts all their movies on there, their music on there, and like leaves it on the hard drive.
I couldn't cope with that because I have only three screens on mine as it is, and I get confused remembering what screen I've put the particular app on in those three. If you were filling, you could have, what, you'd be like up to 10 or whatever, I don't know, 20, you'd be mad.
You'd have to stash all your games in those, but, you know, the games folders, you can do those subfolders.
It's music and movies that's going to, it's music and movies,
yeah,
really,
movies
that's
takes
take
up a lot of
space. Like, so, most of the top-end games, I mean, like, most of the games I've been playing have been, what, 20, 30 megabytes? Like, top-end stuff's, what, half a gig, maybe? Maybe a gig or two.
Yeah, a couple of gig it can go up to, yeah.
But still, I mean, they're minimal. Like, the number of games that do that are absolutely minimal.
It's true, but I mean, like, in a world where now you buy desktop computers and you're talking about having at least a terabyte on there, and the fact that more and more people are using their iPads either for games or for entertainment purposes or whatever, and the games are only going to get bigger in storage size. They're not going to go backwards. So, I mean,
they're not going to go backwards, but I don't know. I mean, computer's a different beast, because the kind of things you have on your computer is vastly different to what you have on your tablet. I mean, I am part of the terabyte generation now. And you know, it's relative, because in a few years' time, I know I'll be complaining that my C drive is full up and I need to get another bigger hard drive.
Mine already is. I've got, you know, like 50 gig left out of a terabyte.
Copious amounts of videos you shouldn't be watching.
Surprising how much space it takes up.
It seems strange to me. Like, yeah, you can kind of idea. People use their tablets to watch movies on trains. I've seen them. But apart from that, a lot of the time, if you're going to watch a movie on a tablet, which I think the iPad isn't particularly geared up to, because you either got to have a stand or hold the thing. Some others, you know, which have stands or whatever built in, are a lot better. But most of that is now geared towards streaming. So it seems a bit weird. Yeah, the size of games is going up, but not to the point where you'd need to jump from 64 to 128. It's a way of people who are Apple obsessed thinking in the back of their mind, and I've been like this with other brands and other products. I've got this one. There's a slightly better one with a bigger hard drive out. Yeah. I should probably get that one.
That leads into another question, which is, do you think this is going to phase out the 16 gig option?
Yeah,
or
I think
knock it down.
Yeah, I think the 16 will probably.
Whoa. Why would they phase out a 16 gig model when they can make that like the entry cheaper end?
Well, for the same reason that the Nexus 7 phased out its 8 gig model when it introduced the 32 gig model.
Okay, but that's 8 gigs. Like, that's 8 gigs of space. Like, fair enough. But like,
I think it's quite. I don't know the logistics of it, but I think it's quite complicated to run too many. I mean, you already have two versions of each one. Well, three if you. Well, four, I suppose. You've got two white, two black of each gig. If you're then asking retailers, they've got a stock. You know, how many does that end up in the end? I think it does get a mite confusing. Plus, you also have the fact that the iPad Mini is their attempt to be kind of slightly cheap. But Apple don't really want to entertain that whole idea of it being cheap too much. They want you to pay £500, and they don't really want you to pay much less than that. It's part of the whole premiumness of the brand is you do. I don't think that. Yeah, you mean you can get 4S. You know, you can get iPhone 4S cheaper, but they kind of do that on the quiet. Really, I would imagine they'd probably say goodbye to the 16.
I think at some point, maybe not immediately, but I can see it going that way.
That allows them to drop the price of the 32 to the price of what the 16 is now.
Yeah, like they do with the old models. The other thing that sort of concerns me about this, that have extremely high level of pricing, or relatively high level of pricing, is that their lifespan is so short now. Like, the last update for the iPad, where they changed from the 3 to the 4, that happened in, like, within 6 or 7 months, and you're going to spend £740 on an iPad that's going to be out of date in less than a year.
I think the one advantage they have that you wouldn't have if you buy lots of other kinds of tablets is that they hold their value. So you buy it, you do pay that amount, but you know. I mean, I've got a couple of friends who do this, who have bought every single iPad when it comes out. You buy it knowing that when the next one comes out, you'll put this one in eBay and you'll get 80% of what you paid for it back, which then goes towards the next one. So in a kind of way, you're never actually paying that amount. But yeah, if it was another tablet, if it was, you know, some random Android tablet by some bizarre firm you'd never heard of, there's no way you'd ever pay that amount, because you'd come to sell it in a year's time and people would say, what the hell's that?
Sure.
Whereas even if you got an iPad 2, you could still get a decent price for it. They do hold their value in what is admittedly a short space of time, a year.
Yes. And it's something that our editor Kristen pointed out when we were talking that, you know, people complain about the price of consoles, home consoles. People complain when the PS, you know, 3 comes out and it's like £400. It's
very cheap now.
And that thing, you know, has a life. PS3 and the Xbox have had lifespans of like 6, 7, 8, whatever it is, years now.
Your 360 probably lasted about 6 months when you got it.
Yeah, that's true. That's probably true.
If that, but yeah, no, but, yeah. It is a good point. But that is probably going to change. I mean, this is the interesting thing about the next consoles. What form they take and how you buy them, the suggestion of maybe you'll rent them. Mm. I think this could have been, or perhaps the beginning of this coming generation, maybe the last time we actually kind of buy a box that we do hold on to for 4, 5, 6, 7 years.
What they're saying, we shall have to see. Well, if you like the idea of 128 gigs of iPad, and you know, I like the idea of it. I would like more space is always good, and I do to do with a lot of video and photos and music and stuff, so I'm sure there'll be a number of like high-end users that find it very, very useful indeed. So if they do want to get hold of it, $639 or $739 if you like your cellular connectivity stuff, and it'll be on sale from February the 5th.
Do you know who don't particularly like the idea of the iPad?
have our Twitter followers spoken?
Guys, we've spoken with the Pocket Gamer community. I put a tweet out. I do that 6 o'clock every Thursday evening. Keep your eyes peeled on at Pocket Gamer. And put a question out. And this time it was the following question. We're recording the podcast and we have a question we want answered by you. Yes, you. Will you be buying a 128 gigabyte iPad, and why, and why not?
Why not?
Well, yeah, that's for the
the people who don't.
Yeah, the people who don't and the people who do at the same time. I think there are some really good answers, actually, some really good ones, and one of them brings up an amazing point. First one is at Rob Else, and he says, no, because even the price of a regular iPad is far too expensive compared to the Nexus 7 and the Kindle Fire HD. He makes a good point there. Obviously, I think, you know, iPad's a bit more of a sort of luxury item, I suppose. It's got that luxury tag to it. Than a Nexus 7 or a Kindle, especially a Kindle Fire.
It's true. And I think, as Keith's pointed out in the past, we think that's sort of a deliberate thing, isn't it? It's deliberately supposed to be a kind of classy luxury product. They like putting it at that higher price. Yeah. But you're right, it does seem to, it's certainly going to alienate a specific audience, but you always get the impression that's sort of deliberate on Apple's part, you know?
Absolutely. At Pelky Tristan says, no, I will never use that many gigabytes before a new and better device comes out. Again, mirroring what we've said. So I think we're right on the money there. And the final one, and I love this one. He actually sent in two tweets, but I'll read the one I really like. To ask me to buy a 128 gigabyte iPad is like asking me to buy a red Game Boy Color when I've already got a yellow one. And actually, I think that's absolutely perfect. Because really, the functionality that you're getting by getting a larger capacity version of essentially exactly the same SKU in every other way, it may as well be a different color Game Boy. It may as well just because the amount of
the different colored Game Boys have different storage space in them.
Well, yeah, admittedly, no, but...
is that where the analogy falls down?
but the point is that, like, for most people, I think this is what at Editor Ged they're trying to get across. The point is that the number of people who will use that amount of space is kind of moot. And so at that point, you're kind of buying the next thing because it is just the new... It is just the new thing to have.
Sure.
It is the red Game Boy Color to the yellow one. I really like that. I think that's a really, really good point.
Well, you're right. It will only appeal to a very high end, and it will totally appeal to the people who have to have the next new one, of which there are quite a few. I mean, you know, Apple runs on that, doesn't it? In a lot of cases.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely right. But so a little bit of a negative kickback from the Twitter crowd.
Yeah, they're not pleased.
Oh,
but,
fair enough.
Yeah, good idea.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't harm. No one's forcing anyone to buy it.
Nope. And no, like I say, once the prices shift and you get rid of the 16, it drops down to 24, and then 128 is the high end, and then we're off. And, you know, 2-3 years' time, the high end will be, you know, 256, and it will just keep climbing and climbing as they always do, I suspect. But yeah, February the 5th if you want one, or don't, whatever. Well, that's exciting new technology being released very soon. What came out this week, though, we thought it's worth mentioning, because it's a kind of little subversive thing that sort of snuck through the App Store policy system. MAME, which is that arcade emulator doodad, the multiple arcade machine emulator, in fact, if you're not familiar with it. It just lets you play old ROMs from arcade machines and loads of arcade machines. Very popular on PCs and whatnot. They've tried to get onto the App Store before, but it's been put up and then taken down again within like a matter of days, because obviously this is the kind of thing that Apple tends to frown upon. They found a sneaky way of getting it back onto the App Store. The app in question is called Gridley, which is actually the name of an unreleased arcade game that was made back in the 80s. It never got put into the arcade cabinets, but the company responsible for it has basically made the license of the software, the ROM, free to use for anybody. So the guys in question, the developer called David Valdata, I think, has put it onto the App Store. But the way that they're getting the app to run is by using MAME. Some dudes on the Touch Arcade forum, the fella posted it up, and then everyone was kind of like, looked inside it and discovered that it was basically just MAME with a ROM pushed inside, which means if you go in there using iExplorer or something, take out the ROM, stick in a new one, then it'll play that game as well. So essentially, it's just MAME on your iPad. The interesting thing of this is it's still there.
It's insane. Is Apple not...
Yeah, and noise has been made about it. This has been up for like 3-4 days now, and I checked it just before we started the podcast. Still there. Apple has not pulled it down. I don't know if it's just a matter of time and they haven't cottoned onto it, but there's been plenty of noise online. It's been flagged up by most websites, and there are forums full of information about it. So I'm surprised no one's cottoned on yet. Do you think this is Apple not getting around to it, or do you think they're going, you know what, we'll just leave it?
They're very busy.
They are. It's true. They are very, very busy.
They have a lot to do.
So do you think they just haven't seen it and this will be shot down before long?
I would have thought so. It's usually the case that they haven't seen something and they rely on people like us ruining the party by
by sharing it via an audio broadcast. We've already put it up online. And like I say, it's been flagged up all over the place. So I'm surprised it's still there. But it seems to be.
As far as I understand, because I used to do emulation a little bit, as far as I understand it, MAME itself isn't illegal. The illegal part of it is putting
the ROMs
that are, but only the ROMs that are not freely available and, you know, not copyrighted, basically. So what I don't know is which terms it contravenes.
I suspect there's something in there about not encouraging or pointing people towards illegal practices or something like that. Maybe.
The thing about Apple is that they don't need to. I mean, when they do remove things, they send an email out to developers with a link to the part of the codes or the terms and conditions that they've violated. But because the wording of all of the terms and conditions is so wide, and actually, when you try to boil it down, usually makes no sense. They can, and we've had emails on Biz from various developers said we've had our app removed for this reason, and doesn't seem to have any relation to actually what their app does. They need no excuse. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's their playground. So they will usually jump down on anything like this that has the potential to. I mean, the fact that we've covered it in the story is evidence enough that it's interesting and that it kind of opens the door, and they won't like that. You know, I'll be very surprised if it's still there. They can turn the screw on anything they don't like.
Exactly.
And it bothers them.
I mean, these things are obviously rife on Android. It's full of emulators. They released another one last week, in fact. I forget the name of it, but it's basically an all-purpose emulator and covers everything from your NES to your SNES to your Neo Geos, pretty much everything across the board. That's still up, and it's free as well. That's still up and running, and there's many, many more on Android. It's obviously much more open and less heavily policed, so it's pretty easy. And one of the benefits of the Android system, to be quite honest with you, because having some emulation stuff is quite fun, especially if you already own the games, and then it's technically not illegal, I don't think. If you own a copy of Legend of Zelda or something, then technically you bought the ROM.
Yeah, that's... It's a very grey area. It's not a grey area in America. If you're in Europe, though, it's slightly dodgy. In America,
I slightly retract what I said then and disassociate myself completely from that previous.
Yeah, thing. It's a shame. Like, I'm quite happy to say that, you know, I'm somebody who does emulation and so forth. Like, I still do the odd bits and pieces, but the thing that I always do is I always think to myself, well, I need to own the game. Like, if I don't own the game, then I don't really have any right, because it's just piracy after that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And that's fair enough, I think.
It's interesting. I guess the bigger question that this news piece brings up is, why would you ever want to play any arcade games with a touchscreen? It's rubbish.
Well, the problem with most emulators, I find, from what I hear, is that the overlays, the control overlays, can be a little bit hit and miss.
Yeah.
The one that was released on Android, whichever way you held the screen, whichever way you oriented the device, it was stretched in a weird, so, you know, the D-pad was like, you know, far wider than it was tall, and it was very awkward to use, and that's far from desirable, you know. And these things obviously aren't optimized for touch screens, so it can be a pretty hit and miss. Some stuff works okay, though, you know, and it's quite useful,
RPGs.
Especially if RPGs. Anything that doesn't require quick reactions, you can kind of get away with it. But if you do really want to have one, then there is a way to do it. You can download this, go and search for Gridley, you can find the app, and if you're savvy, there are ways to open up the contents, use iExplorer, dig out the file, and you can swap it out if you want to. But we wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't around for that much longer. So go and have a look, I suppose, before it vanishes without a trace. Speaking of which, we were supposed to have a brand new Broken Sword on the way. It was a Kickstarter project. It was called Broken Sword, The Serpent's Curse. And we were all expecting it to turn up April or something like that. Unfortunately, Revolution has been delayed and it's not going to make it.
Yep.
Not permanently, of course. It will turn up at some point. But now it's been pushed back into like Q2, Q3 of this year, which is a little bit sad because we were looking forward to this one. Or were we?
Well, you know, let me preface the next thing that I say by saying I really like Revolution. I really like Broken Sword. Love it, right?
Okay.
But this is the thinking. We've got your money now. We've got your money.
Really?
Can take as long as you like. Like, of course they can. Like,
well, they can take as long as they like, but surely that's... I like it when games miss dates, generally, because it means that they're not throwing out some half-finished load of rubbish.
Yeah, okay, fine. But, like, that idea absolutely works when the person doesn't have my money already. Say, for example, I said to a builder, right? Come round. By the way, what I want done is I'd like you to build me a wall. And they go, okay, brilliant. You give me 200 quid now, and I'll get it done. And then you go, okay, here's the 200 quid. What is the impetus for that builder to go and build that wall for you? There isn't any. So, but the other way, you know, the traditional way that people have sold services and products is, if you give me something, I will give you the money in return. And what we're seeing at the moment is this really... It's really getting me hacked off now.
I can tell.
This is the second podcast in a row that I've been on where there has been a Kickstarter project where they've gone, might be a little bit late now. And they're like, it's a high profile game. Like, it's not good enough. If you say, if the game isn't good enough at the stage that it is in right now, yes, absolutely, I would rather that game was delayed. But when you are putting that message out on Kickstarter, you give yourself enough time and say, right, rather than saying, oh, yeah, it'll be out tomorrow, you give us the money, we'll give it to you tomorrow. Say, give us the money and we will take a year to make this game for you. Because otherwise, you're playing with people's expectations.
There's a similar contrast here that before Christmas, if you went into any of the game shops, you could put down, merely put down a pre-order for Grand Theft Auto 5, And, you know, and a lot of retailers use that as a way to sell consoles over the Christmas period. That you have, you know, it was actually sometimes there were more boxes for pre-orders of GTA 5 than there were for games that were actually out.
Yeah.
And now, of course, now that's slipped to September. Yeah. So I think that's a far bigger deal. I think you've got to give developers some leeway, especially a team like Revolution who, you know, as I understand it, you know, they're not a big team. And I'm sure that they've probably, you know, there's no doubt it's going to come out. They're a reputable firm. They're not going to take your money and run. But obviously it isn't ready. And, you know, fair enough. You can, you know, with the best of intentions, lay out a date for something. But games slip all the time. The only problem is that Kickstarter is essentially, you know, it's a pre-order service. And anyone who pre-orders a game, you can get burnt when it doesn't come out if you're expecting it to come out.
Also, yeah. It did exceed its limits by a fair bit. And that meant it was got stretch goals, I think, how it works for Kickstarter, which means that's extra work on top of what the original plan was, wasn't it?
Okay, no, I absolutely get that, and as a, like, that is why I said at the start, like I like Revolution, I love the Broken Sword games. Like, I've interviewed Charles Cecil, he's a lovely man, and I have absolutely no doubt that this is coming out, and I've no doubt that it will be a game that I play and probably enjoy.
Sure.
But from a consumer viewpoint, this sort of stuff, I'm sorry, it's not good enough. And to say, you know, you have to give them a bit of leeway because, you know, they want to do even more and they, you know, it's essentially a pre-order, so a company gets to have this kind of flexibility. I don't actually think that that's a value proposition for a consumer.
Buyer beware, as with anything, yeah. You know, if you hand out, I mean, this is what makes me more, that is the only Kickstarter I've given any money to. I've even, you know, as bad as it sounds, not funded things by people I know. But that is the one time I have done, because it's a game that I will generally play, and you know it's a company it's not going to run away. But I just think it's such is life that, you know, we can all say we mean to have things ready for a certain time, and we don't. And
I do understand the practicalities of it, and you know, as I say, I'm, you know, I've no doubt that it will be coming to the consumers. But it's one of these strange moments where the consumer is much closer to the product than they usually are. Yep. Because the relationship is no longer, we have made this, would you like it? It's, we are going to make this, will you help us do it? Mm. And at that point, I think that the game changes. And maybe it's... maybe this will be a part of how Kickstarter evolves to the point where people will give themselves a little bit more time, and we might see games come out earlier than they're meant to sort of encourage people to, you know, maybe that's a goal that people might start adding to their Kickstarters, like, give us an extra 5,000 and it will come out 2 months prior.
It would make sense to give them some kind of wiggle room, and I agree it is a different situation than if a normal company just makes a game off of its own back and then offers it to the consumer.
Yeah.
Reality is that games slip all the time, like you say, and there is always going to be a case where something's planned to come out, like GTA 5, you know, it's slipped, and this has happened a million times before. And whether we've paid for the game on their behalf already, or whether they funded it independently, it's always going to happen. I think that maybe the audience has more of a right to get a bit upset about it via Kickstarter, but as you've said, Keith, like, it is a buyer beware situation, and I think it's kind of naive for people to genuinely believe it's going to come out, all the games will come out on time.
Conversely, I think that closest actually means that I'm more inclined to give them the benefit of the doubt, because I've made the extra thought process of thinking, you know, as this thing doesn't exist and I'm handing over money for it. So I will think more about, you know, as I've only done one, and I, you know, obviously considered that more than I thought I just bought it on the shelves. But I think this is better than, I remember when, you know, it's a lot, many years ago now, but when Xbox and PS3 came along, and there was this habit that developers had of putting out big games before that they should have done, and it almost became processed that they would put games out and then update them a month or so later with bug fixing things, because they suddenly could now. They suddenly had a means where they could update their games digitally. And I think, you know, I think that was worse, again, that people were handing over their money, what was 40 quid.
People have paid for a lot of betas.
Yeah, exactly, they have, and it works in progress. Yeah.
I'd rather have a finished game, even if it's delayed. I understand the principle behind it, and I think you're quite right, Peter. It is you would like to expect better, and you have a right to some degree to expect better. But at the
I
same
just
time,
love Revolution so much. I'm just so hurt.
I can tell. It's really got to you. The rage, the terrible rage. Well, second half of the year, hopefully. It's not going anywhere. We will see it coming. Broken Sword, The Serpent's Curse. Don't worry, guys. It's still there. It's still coming. We trust them. But even though that hasn't come out yet, there are a bunch of games that have already come out this week. So we're going to round up a few of them in this week's new releases. First on this week's new releases, we have Little Inferno, which is a sort of puzzle sandbox game which has been brought to us by Tomorrow Corporation, which sounds a bit, I don't know, futuristic and dystopic. Yep. Which actually started out life on the Wii U. You've got a Wii U, haven't you, Mr. Keith Andrew?
No, I don't know.
Oh, don't you? Oh, I thought I saw you tweeting about
just
playing one.
Using Will Wilson's a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, you're abusing your friendship with a
former presenter.
Who? Yeah. Will who? Yes, Mr. Will Wilson, former host of this very podcast. He's got a Wii U, and you were playing things. Didn't suppose you played this, did you?
No.
All right, damn. Well, what it is a little sandbox puzzle. Essentially, you're presented with a fireplace, which is burning away, and you have to chuck items, kind of household items, onto the fire. And the idea is that you're supposed to make combinations and kind of solve puzzles, which are sometimes text-based. So you burn specific combinations in order to unlock prizes and unlock stamps. You earn stamps, and these stamps can be used to get extra items quicker. And the idea is to get more and more and more combinations of items all burnt together to fulfill these little prizes. Now, it all sort of sounds a bit dull, but that's sort of the point. Apparently, it's a kind of satirical take on freemium games, which force you to wait for stuff and do lots of, you know, semi-pointless things and then sit around waiting for your energy to charge up so you can use it again. There's this kind of narrative that's woven through it, which is supposed to be a little bit satirical. We've reviewed it, gave it a 7 out of 10, and said it's like not necessarily the best game, but you should play it because of the content of it, because of what it's saying. I'm kind of interested.
Actually, I'm one of those people that quite likes freemium games, so I don't know if I'd feel a little bit offended. I'm playing a different game at the moment on another system, and it kind of takes the mickey out of, like, JRPGs.
Oh, yeah.
And I quite like JRPGs, and I'm feeling a little bit offended every time I play it. Like, oh...
It's marking you.
This cuts a little too close to home.
Well, I think it's £2.99, $4.99, I think. We've given it a good review, so it's worth playing for the story and the thematic content, I suppose. It looks pretty too. Good fire effects, which is always handy if you're going to do a fire game. Moving on. This interested me because of the people behind it. Tabletop Racing, by a new startup called Playrise Digital, which is comprised of ex-members of Studio Liverpool, who happen to be one of my ex-favourite developers ever, because they were Psygnosis, and they were responsible for all those lovely Amiga games, and more recently the Wipeout franchise, which is my favourite. And so they've gone and done, like, three of them, I think, have got together, and they've knocked up a racing game for iOS. Which is immediately, well, yeah, they've knocked one up.
Knocked together.
I like developed. I think that's a good
phrase. Oh, what? You buff old traditionalist, you. That's your business speak, isn't it? They developed. No, we just throw them together, whack them. It's in a shed. They just bung it together in a shed. And, you know, just fling out the window and hopefully it'll crash into an iPad at some point. And make someone very happy. Well, rather than being an actual Wipeout-style game, which is what you might expect, it's more in line with something like Micro Machines. So it's kind of a micro-type racer where you're driving little toy cars around tabletops and floors and all that sort of stuff. Sort of behind... I think it's a like third-person perspective. It's not a top-down view quite like Micro Machines was. But it looks pretty enough. We've reviewed it. It got a bronze award as well. Said it's pretty good. Not necessarily doing as much as some of the other comparable races on the market. Harry said it didn't quite have the depth of some of them, but it was still good, still fun, still entertaining. The interesting thing to take away from this, I thought, was they've just chimed up on Twitter, the developers, saying, because the obvious question that emerged was, when are you going to do a Wipeout one? When are you going to do an anti-gravity futuristic racer? And they went, well, we might do if Tabletop Racer sells well. Which is a cunning ploy, I think.
My big question is, when you're doing another Roll Cage.
Exactly, thank you. Roll Cage was amazing and massively overlooked. They did do that sequel, but I loved Roll Cage. It was genius.
They technically did do a third Roll Cage game, and it was called Firebugs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a children's game released right at the end of the PS1's lifespan.
Oh.
But it's made by exactly the same people. And theoretically, they released a fourth one, which was a Lego-based... Lego Bionic?
Yep.
It was called Drome Racers, and it was made by the Roll Cage boys. So...
I refuse to acknowledge those. They are non-canon.
They are non-canon in the Roll Cage universe.
I'm pulling a Star Wars prequels on this. These are non-canon, and I refuse to believe they exist.
Fair enough.
Real Roll Cage sequel from the real people. But... this is a kind of interesting way of trying to get support for the game, I suppose, playing on the love of Wipeout.
This could be another situation that gets Pete in a fury, though, if it never turns up.
No, yeah, I wouldn't. I literally could never. I could never be hurt by those boys because they have given me so many hours of gaming.
They are heroes to a man. No, they are. They are my favorite developer ever.
They made a very nice World Rally Championship. Came on PlayStation 2 once that I enjoyed for many years.
WRC3.
I can't remember what year it was, but it was the only one they did, or at least it came at a time they only just got the license and then it disappeared again. But it was very good.
They had balloons in it. Honestly, when they announced that they were being forced to shut down, and they sent out a little picture like saying thanks for sticking with us or something, and it was the Wipeout. It was like a Wipeout craft, like a Pfizer craft, blasting off against the white background. And I was genuinely a little bit tear in the eye. I've never got that way about a studio closing, but seriously, they put out this little post and I was just like, oh
yeah,
that got me right there. That did. So
Pfizer especially. Oh
yeah, yeah, I know. Classic. But this isn't that, but it is a racer. It's from the guys and apparently it's pretty good. So go and give them your money because they're cool. And they made Wipeout for crying out loud. What more do you need to know? Anyway, moving along. Pixel People, which at first glance appears to be a Kairosoft, however you pronounce it, because it's a city builder pixel art game with bright colors where you control a city and it's a bit god simmy, and immediately made me think of all the various Kairosoft games that are out there. But it's not, though. It's done by a developer called Lamdamu Games, and
Lamdamu.
Yeah, sure, why not? And it's published by it's this week's Chillingo update, because it's been 25
seconds. How are they? Are they all right, Chillingo?
Oh, yeah. Check back in another 25 seconds, and we can talk about the new one. It is set in a future where cloning is totally cool and, no moral problems with that whatsoever. Splice a pig with an elephant, as South Park would say, or in this case, an engineer with a mare or something. The idea is that you're crossbreeding people in order to create different careers and job types. So if you want to get a mechanic, apparently you have to cross a mare with an engineer or something like that. And it really does look like the Kairosoft games. Deputy Mark has been playing it. Deputy Mark, that sounds better. Deputy Editor Mark Brown has been playing it. And he says he's still playing it, but he's not quite sure why.
Is he enjoying it?
Well, he says it's just like, yeah, I think he's caught up in it in an addictive way, but he's, I don't know, not quite.
We got sent little versions of ourselves in this game, didn't we?
That was what I was thinking. I was like, are you playing it because you're now one of them?
Really?
They've flattered his vanity.
Yeah.
Are you really in this?
No, they're not in the game. But
we got sent little versions of ourselves drawn by the developer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a little pixel art.
Only the famous ones of us.
What do you mean the famous ones?
The famous members of the PG team.
Oh.
The editors and junk, yeah. They got it. And the thing I liked about it is the city that you're cloning these people inside is called Utopia, which is fair enough. But the currency is called Utopium.
No, that's cool.
Which is two letters away from opium, which I liked, and means it'll probably get banned in Australia. So they're a bit testy about all that, aren't they?
What, drugs?
In games. Don't you remember in like Fallout 3 got banned because one of the power-ups in the game was called morphine? And they really? Went, oh, this promotes drug release, so they had to change the name of the game for that localization, name of the drug.
For a country of ex-criminals, they're pretty hot on their laws, aren't they?
They're not a country of ex-criminals. They're a country which is descended from criminals. That's a different thing altogether. We've just lost our entire Antipodean audience in one fell swoop.
Sorry, I don't mean it. Yeah, I'm just being mean. I'm just being mean. If you're still listening, Australians, I genuinely am being just playing the mean card.
Sure. Well, this Pixel People is currently out. I think it's. I'm gonna say it's free.
It is. Shouldn't you find out?
Is it? Yeah. No, Peter's confirmed it for me because he knows what's going on. Apparently. Well, I'm just throwing out random guesses. Apparently, it is. It is free.
So I'm gonna say it's £80.
Yeah, you do that, and we'll meet somewhere in the middle, and neither of us will be right.
Yeah.
Go check that out. I'm gonna briefly. There's a game called Cairo. Which is a game that was available on the PCs. It was apparently very mysterious, elegant, so the press says. Beautiful, captivating. People, it got lots of rave reviews. It's kind of a game where you're kind of wandering around a floating 3D block world looking at things.
We've not given it a rave review.
No, I know. That's the thing. The original PC release got all kind of plaudits, and they said it was gorgeous and lovely and atmospheric and blah, blah, blah. It's just come to iPad, and apparently it's a bit balls.
It's a bit balls.
I'm paraphrasing from the review, obviously. Yeah. What Matt Wales actually said, our reviewer, was an abstract atmospheric exploration adventure near ruined by a breathtakingly ill-conceived iOS port.
Wowzers. Apparently, that's why he's a writer, and you know, you're one of our cleaners that we have. To,
Which I occasionally, you strap a microphone to me and make me. Talk about games from time to time. Yeah, apparently the controls for Cairo, the iOS version, are a bit rubbish. And it just doesn't work, which is a common theme with especially first-person games ported to iOS platforms. It's very difficult to replicate those controls decently. Apparently this one, you use your right thumb to move around, you know, wave it around the screen and you look around, and that's fine. But the actual movement controls are confined to a really, really tiny little floating D-pad in the corner, and there's no strafe controls or anything, and apparently it's just an utter nightmare to control. So poor optimization has resulted in a very dodgy game. So it's out, but you know, you have been warned. The other one I will mention, because it kind of looks interesting and a bit weird, Composition J, by a company called Shovelsoft, which is available for iPad only. It's a kind of like a cubist painting brought to life, I suppose. It's lots of vertical and horizontal lines, and it's a 3D space, and the idea is that you're trying to trap these bouncing balls within the confines of certain areas by moving the parameters, like moving walls, essentially. But it's done in 3D. It's all very... Everything's transparent. It's quite... Obviously, it's quite abstract and a bit weird-looking, and it's obviously taking inspiration from modern art and stuff like that. I don't know whether this is style over substance. It could well be. Haven't played it, couldn't say. Have played a couple of games this week, though. So we should all have a wee chat about what we've been playing this week.
In the section where we have a wee chat about what we've been playing this week.
The very same.
It's very catchy.
What we've been playing! Mr. Peter Willington.
Hey.
Hey there. What have you been playing?
Well, Joe Danger Touch.
Oh, I.
Oh, yeah. So I have been giving it a bit of a go because I really, really loved the PlayStation and 360 versions. I thought they were ace.
You and many others, yeah.
Many others. And it's a game that's got like a lot of charm. The series has always had a lot of charm, and it's well-natured and good-humoured. And I kind of thought, I want one of those. And also I missed out on Rayman Jungle Run. And the game got kind of linked to that. They sort of said, you know, this is to Joe Danger what Jungle Run was to Rayman Origins. And I thought, okay, that sounds interesting. It is absolutely fantastic.
Oh, good.
It's really, really smart. I love the fact that they didn't bow down to this weird peer pressure that people were putting on them of, wanting floating controls so that you know, to try and replicate the experience found on PlayStation Network and on Live Marketplace. It looks absolutely gorgeous. It runs super smooth. The cartoon visuals are just lovely and bright, and there's just sort of cheeky humor to everything. It's like the ultimate evolution of what I think of as like the British game. You know, it's got this it's got this sort of wink and a nod to the audience all of the time, and I really love that. The sort of point system and the actual the point system is, you know, you really want to keep playing to try and hit those high scores and to compete with your friends. There's lots of leaderboard access. The leaderboards aren't quite as intricate as I would have quite liked. Like I'd quite like to be able to see individual tracks and how people performed on individual tracks, but unfortunately you have to do it across the entire tour. You know, that's not too much, I suppose. It's a small detail, but I would quite have liked that. And I really like the simple control method of you know, you to bounce, you tap the screen once to do a wheelie, you pull back to do a forward flip, you swipe right. You know, it's just really elegant, really simply done. And I just thought that was absolutely excellent. And part of the reason that I played it, and I'm going to put a cheeky little plug into the show right now.
Sinister.
It is a little bit sinister, isn't it? I'm sure both of you neither of you have. And I'm really disappointed, actually. I'm not so necessarily disappointed.
I don't actually have no danger at this point.
Well, that's no excuse. Basically... we're running this thing called Gamer X on Pocket Gamer, and essentially what it is you can win some awesome Joe Danger prizes, like swag and stuff, really, really cool stuff, basically just for competing in Joe Danger and adding Pocket Gamer X on Game Center. Yeah. So I've kind of been playing it for that as well. Like, I want to kind of beat this Gamer X character. Like, I've found out, in comparison, I am rubbish. But there is that little competitive aspect that's sort of come out in me from playing this. And, so obviously, you know, listeners, go and play that. If you're into Joe Danger and you fancy winning something, then go and play that. But if you don't have Joe Danger, James, then you really should get it, because it is absolutely brilliantly put together. Like, it's just, it's a very good mobile representation of that gives you a sample and like a flavor of what this big full experiences, but in doing so creates its own game, creates its own set of rules, and is much better for it. And is much more accessible to a sort of wider audience. Yeah, so really, really good, really enjoying that. 5 thumbs up.
Wow.
Out of 5 thumbs.
How have you got 5 thumbs?
You gotta have one. Committed mobile gamers have to have numerous thumbs in order to deal with the controls.
I've had thumb transplants, but the weird thing is they're not all on my hand.
Ew. Gross. All right. Well,
I thought you were just pleased to see me last time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's why I gave you a thumbs up.
Oh, how we've missed you.
It's a big thumbs up.
Yeah. Anyhow. I will get that. I've heard nothing but good things. You're absolutely right, and it's supposed to be brilliant. I'm looking forward to it. My problem is that I have this terrible feeling like I'm going to download it and it's going to stutter on my iPad 1, and then I'm going to get a bad impression of it, but whatever. But something that does run on my iPad 1 very, very well, it's not a new game, but it is a retro platformer affair called Mutant Muds. I've been playing that this week. It's really quite good fun. It's been... a very good example of how to cash in on that whole nostalgia angle, which I know is stupidly popular nowadays, but it's very hit and miss. Some people just put a pixel art game up and go, hey, there you go. That reminds me of the 80s, doesn't it? But it's rubbish, so who cares? Mutant Muds is actually very good. It does an excellent version of the transition. Obviously, it has to do floating controls, so it's just up, down, left, right. B and A, proper NES-style controls. But they have been implemented very well. for this sort of thing. Generally, I'm not a huge fan, but especially on iPad, the controls are very, they're large, they're very easy to press. Actually, the B and A buttons, I consider, might even be a little bit too far apart, if I was being finickety. But the actual directional controls are great. It's A to jump and B to fire. If you press down, you can drop through other layers. And if you press up, you kind of, you know, warp through doors. All very minimal. And if you've played any 80s platformer, you'll be well familiar with this. Pixel art's really nice. It's done in a silly sort of, you're a kid with glasses and blonde hair with some zap gun thing. And mud has come to life. That's the idea. Space mud. A meteorite hit the Earth. I don't know. Some ridiculous plotline. But the thing that separates it slightly is that it has this different plane system. So whilst you're jumping along and progressing through the level, you'll occasionally reach a kind of golden pad on the floor. And you'll notice that in the background of the level, obviously, there's other platforms and things going on. And you think it's just the background. But when you walk on and step onto these pads and you press up and jump, you will jump into the background. And then you'll be able to move your character around. And because of the kind of parallax scrolling thing that's going on, and the fact that your character is now far away and seems a bit more in the distance, it's actually quite good fun. It feels a little bit kind of weird in the background, because now you're moving left and right, and suddenly the foreground's whooshing past you much faster. And it's kind of neat. And equally, you can jump into the foreground, which makes your pixel art character look even more pixely and blocky. And it's done at kind of the right time. The levels have a very free-form feel to them, so you can go through secret passages and you can explore or not explore and go straight to the end. It's quite open-ended and not altogether, you know, that linear, which is a nice change. It's charming, it's fun, it's not going to necessarily set the world on fire. I mean, I think it's already done reasonably well. It's been out for a while now. I'm late to the game, but it's free at the moment, which is one of the reasons I picked it up. I think it will still be free by the time this goes up. So go and have a look. If you haven't downloaded it, it's still free. Get it, genuinely, because it is a really good example of a retro platformer that sort of gets it right. So that's kind of nice. The other thing that I've been playing that has kind of consumed me a little bit, I haven't had many free moments, but when I have, I've been playing this, is Super Hexagon.
Yes.
Yes, I know you're ahead of the game with me on this one, but... Oh God, it's so good, good. I mean, it's ludicrously hard, and you know, if you haven't seen it, you're a little triangle on the screen. You're orbiting around this hexagon, and all of these barriers are essentially fluxing towards the center of the screen as if pulled in by gravity. And what you have to do is find gaps in those walls that are coming in to dodge and basically stay alive. It is ridiculously hard, to the point where the three difficulty settings are like hardest and get. It is a very pretty vector type graphics. Couldn't be more minimal. You are literally a triangle on screen.
Yeah.
And it's just touch the screen left and right to swivel around. But it's so immediate. The quick restarts, the fact that you can just tap and you immediately restart, that cannot be underestimated, the draw of that in a game. All games should have that.
Yeah.
And everyone would play them much, much, much more. The 10-15 second loading screen is one of the biggest turnoffs in gaming. And any game that has that, press the button, you instantly restart. It's one of the things that Trials got right. You just touch and it restarts and you're off. There's no pause, and it is the very the prime example of what a must play one more go kind of game is. And Super Hexagon is exactly that, and it is stunning. And it punishes you relentlessly, and despite the fact that, you know, you will last seconds. I mean, the idea is, you know, it goes up to like a minute or something and then you unlock the next level. That's it. When you first start it, staying alive for 10 seconds is a hardship. Because it's that tough. But you do get into a flow, you do learn it, and the reward for just lasting 20 seconds or 30 seconds or whatever is so great. It's just incredibly rewarding. Such a simple thing. They're done by Terry Kavanagh, who I know you're a big fan of, Peter, and I am now a huge fan of as well. It's fantastic. It's been out on iPad for a while, iPhone and iPad. For God's sake, get it, because it's brilliant.
For God's sake.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Absolutely. But that leaves Mr. Keith Andrew. What have you been playing this week, sir?
I have been playing on my aforementioned scratchy iPad.
Mm-hmm.
Battle of the Bulge.
Ooh, yeah. Now this is serious business, Battle of the Bulge.
Kind of.
it's war.
Yes, it is war. It's a very, it's anyone who watched Band of Brothers or has any interest in the war will know what Battle of the Bulge was, and this attempts to kind of take the strategy of was a last minute fight back, and place it into kind of grid type system where, depending on, there are different missions. I'm awful at this game, but keep playing it, of trying to essentially kind of rewrite history. And well, you can actually later on, you can play for the Allies, but initially your first go is to play for the Axis of Evil. Yeah, and it's very, essentially it's just like a little game of chess, really. You move various different kinds of pieces, either like tanks or just soldiers or kind of a mixture around. They can move a certain number of squares each go, and then when they come in contact with the enemy, it brings up a little kind of box where they have a little fight, and it's kind of stats based. There seems to be an element of randomness in there, but essentially if the numbers are on your side, by and large you'll win. And then if you win that particular skirmish, you can then move any tanks you have onto another piece. And so the idea is, if you're obviously playing as Germany, that you've got to kind of clear the board and get to the other side. If you're playing as the Allies, you kind of got to stop them. So the first one, literally only, you just have 3 days. It's kind of almost like a little trial run. And I've been super awful at doing this. All you have to do is get to the river, which isn't even on the far side. And I found it incredibly difficult because obviously the whole thing about the Battle of the Bulge was that a lot of it took place in the middle of a forest. And that kind of interrupts with the kind of pure statsness of it. So you can pull up your tanks, but if the guys you're fighting are hidden in the trees, your shots are going to miss, essentially, and you can find yourself, your lot, being destroyed. And so it takes some getting used to. It's very simple to play, but it is rather difficult to kind of get your head around what appears to be an easy route, often turns out not to be at all. But the AI in it seems to be very good, actually. And you can play against two different generals, one of which is more ambitious than the other one, who is much more defensive. And it is just done quite simply. It has a nice little kind of soundtrack. You can hear snow, kind of coldness, the wind blowing as you're doing it. And it doesn't kind of attempt to dramatize or politicize the event at all. It's just a literal kind of little kind of game of strategy that plays out very nicely. I do get the feeling sometimes it does cheat a little bit, and you can line up what would clearly ruin the other side, and for some reason it doesn't, which can be a little bit annoying because your moves are so limited, especially when you're playing the first 3 day one, that it really does matter. You make a wrong move and essentially that's kind of game over, really. But yeah, it's very nicely done. And like I say, I'm only a little bit into it and I'm awful. So how far I'm going to get, I don't know, but I keep finding myself thinking while I'm not playing it, which is a good sign. Oh, what if I set them down that way instead? Yeah. What if I massed my tanks on that bit and moved there? So yeah, it's,
that's cool. Like when you're way strategizing, you realize
exactly I'm not even bloody playing the thing and I'm thinking about how I can play the thing. So that's so. It's a good sign. And given it's on iPad 1 and it actually runs.
Ooh.
So
I might have a look at it myself then.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. I can't remember the games that run normally on this thing, but yeah.
Perfect. So what you're basically saying, Keith, is that you've spent the last week battling your bulge. Thank you. I'll be here. I can't believe you haven't said that, Keith. I was just waiting for you at some point to say
that joke somewhere. Did I not make it in the email when I was telling you what I was playing? I can't remember. I have made that joke today somewhere.
Oh, well.
I made some joke about sitting on the back of a bus and battling. Yeah.
The public must know. Very important stuff. Well, that's a positive regard from all. So that's three good games there. You can go and try out. Plenty to be getting on with. Well, four good games, if you count Super Hexagon, which you better do because it's really good. So go and get them. But that sort of wraps it up for this week. Go and check out the site. Go and vote for your game of the week. As always, the games that we've mentioned this week, you can find a link in the bottom of the podcast story or just type in game of the week on the Pocket Gamer search and you will find it. Go to pocketgamer.biz, find out all the extra interview bits and bobs, and check out the Facebook page and obviously at Pocket Gamer on Twitter. Ask us some more questions. We'll be around next Thursday, around about 6 o'clock in the evening. Keep your eye on the Twitter feed. We'll ping out some questions, get mentioned on the podcast, have your thoughts aired to the nation or whatever. And unless you're Australian, in which case Peter won't read them out because he's really awesome.
I should apologise for my action.
Too late. Anyway, thanks for joining us. Good to have you back, guys. We will be back again next week for more Pocket Gaming News. Take it easy. Bye.